Hi, this is Steffi and welcome to the Financial Fox. Last week, I attended the Paris Blockchain Week, where I moderated a panel on regulation in the metaverse, very interesting topic, but I also met many founders in Web3, and I had the opportunity to meet the Bitfinex and Tether team and sit down with the CTO, Paolo Arduino. In this show, I'm going to share my conversation with Paolo. But before we get into the show, if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel and podcast, click the subscribe button now and follow us on our social media to stay up to date with our news and interviews. And here is my conversation with Paolo. Paolo, really nice to meet you. It's great to be here in Paris together with all your team.
Well, thank you very much, Sonia, for being here. Accepted.
Yeah, so perhaps maybe you could tell a little bit about yourself and your role at Bitfinex and also Tether. We try to don't mix the things up, but just to make sure that we kind of clarify the different companies and the different projects as well.
So I'm a developer since this year would be 30 years, so I'm 38. And started coding so really young age. That's the only thing that I, basically the thing that I did for all my life. And then studied math, applied to computer science. And then being Italian, I think that many Italians can relate to that there is no job in Italy. And so especially if you are a developer, you are paid like a really low salary, even though, of course, the development role, the software developer role is growing in importance and has been growing in importance for the last 20 years. And so as many started looking at other opportunities and so started learning about finance. And so I built with a few other teammates a startup in London that would deliver cloud-based financial services. We had a few hedge funds in the city as our customers. Then in 2014, I came to know Giancarlo, the CFO of Bitfinex and Tether. Bitfinex at the time was a growing exchange, was becoming one of the most popular exchanges. You know, back in time, there were probably five exchanges, that's it, right? Today, there are 500 exchanges for crypto exchanges. But Bitfinex was growing, and the issues at that time were that the exchanges were kind of e-commerces for Bitcoin rather than actually trading platforms. And my role was, given my expertise in distributed applications, parallel computing, was actually to step up the technology of Bitfinex so that it could start providing, resisting to more load, more users, and scale up. So I started doing that for a few years. 2016, I became the CTO, and so took over the entire development of the platform and all its services, and brought Bitfinex to the technological excellence that is today. In 2017, I became also the CTO of Tether, and there I started managing the security, so the blockchain deployments, the security, and also the strategy when it comes to all the emerging markets.
Okay, that's interesting. So if we go back to Bitfinex, obviously, as you said, now there are many, many exchanges. But what's happened with FTX? What's happened also with the American banks? I think it kind of impacted the crypto market a lot as well as the financial market. And the role of bank is kind of changing, and the role of exchanges is becoming more challenging as well, because there is the aspect of customer protection that you have to keep in mind. So my question would be, as we are coming out of these, collapses, so these bear market, who are going to be the survivors?
Well, I think the survivors are going to be the ones that, first of all, didn't spend all their money into stadiums, sponsorships, and marketing like F1 or football teams and so on. So we wondered a lot ourselves in the last years if we should do that, and the answer was always, we are a lean company. And it's impossible that this thing, that this, you know, marketing approach where you spend hundreds of millions of dollars will continue, because the world is going, the financial world is not, will change soon, because as we are seeing that, right? So the financial industry is in big troubles, and the crypto exchanges are overspending. They are making the classic mistake of a booming industry like in the 2000s when there was the internet bubble, right? So all the new companies were doing crazy marketing stunts, and then, you know, the bubble popped, and everyone didn't have any more, all these companies didn't have any more cash flow, and didn't have enough funding to sustain all their employees. In fact, we are seeing cuts in terms of employees from, you know, 15 to 45% in all the major crypto companies. Nor Bitfinex nor Tether fired or had to fire any employee or contractor for that reason, right? So we have always been a lean company, always focusing on building technological solutions. And our idea is that winning is a marathon, is not a sprint. And because the, you know, the conditions of the world, especially in regulatory, you know, volatility and so on, are changing so rapidly and are kind of unpredictable in this moment in time. Also, the geopolitical situation is changing rapidly. So wasting money was definitely not on the table for us, and I think is paying out really well.
Yeah, that's really a good point. Another aspect, though, is decentralized exchange versus centralized exchange. As we are moving towards more decentralized exchange, mass adoption of crypto is growing, so people are skilling up a little bit more, are able actually to use a wallet. What is going to be the future of centralized exchange like Bitfinex?
Well, three points in favor. So the first one is non-custodial. The second one is transparency, so you can see everything on chain. So you can make sure that the exchange is not cheating, for example. And the third one is the ability to do non-KYC. So basically, they are on centralized exchanges, like every centralized exchange nowadays has KYC information to trade. But the idea is that on DEXs, you would be on chain, and so you you kind of are in a situation where, you know, these DEXs are hiding, in my opinion, behind a finger, because their claim is, you know, there is no company, there is you know, there is no one entitled to collect KYCs and so on. But the reality of things is, and so these are three great points. I think the most important one is non-custodial, so the ability to segregate the risk of the trading venue with the custody. And if custody remains in your hands, is great. So that should continue, and that will continue, in my opinion. That is a great value proposition. But the second one, I would say, is that was transparency. Also, for DEXs, create some problems, because you can have front running. So since everything is on chain, all the orders are on chain. So it means that if someone is watching the mempool for Ethereum, for example, could actually front run you. And that is actually happening. And actually, there are incentives for the thing called MEV. So there are on Ethereum, so that bigger traders can bribe with higher fees miners or validators, now that we are on proof of stake, in order to front run other users. So that is a classic, it's an interesting incentive, but works and exists and is kind of worrisome for big trading firms. And the third one is non-KYC. So if there is a thing that regulator hate the more than the issue, so the all the money flow that is coming from the banking into crypto, is the non-KYC part, right, of DEXs and lending pools. So in my opinion, and after talking to regulators and talking to people in the European Commission, as well as in the different commissions in the US, there is a huge interest of forcing KYC on DEX platforms as well. So the reason is that they, you know, if they, the issue is money laundering, and as we have seen with Tornado Cash, there is the push of, and there is a first example of how a privacy solution got the developer that developed it in trouble. That is the first time that happens, and it's kind of scary. And I think that is the aim of regulators, is saying, look, guys, you know, that's it. You cannot keep going with non-KYC lending pool or so on, because that, so, and also from a user perspective, the claim will be that if you're using a lending pool that is non-KYC, you could actually lend money to a terrorist,
yeah,
right? So I think, and also for most of these smart contracts, you know, there are DAOs behind them, and that in theory could be fine, but the reality of the thing is that these DAOs are the 70% of the supply of these DAOs are, or these DAOs tokens are in the hands of like five guys.
One person, one vote, right?
Yes. Yes, but the one person has like
70%
of the vote.
Exactly.
And so it's really hard for them to claim that they are fully decentralized. And so I think this issue will bite them. And so, yeah, my point is, I think in the future what we are going to see, and I think Bitfinex actually was the precursor of all this with Adfinex and a few different other products in the past. We started experimenting the ability of using a centralized matching engine and trading platform, but with external custody and non-custodial custody. So in the past, we were offering on Ethereum for Ethereum-based tokens. Now we paused it because the non-KYC part was actually the thing that everyone was more excited about, and being a centralized exchange, we cannot afford it. So we paused the project. But we were allowing already, and since 2017, to trade with through your MetaMask on Bitfinex with this product called Ethnex. But also to coming from the traditional finance myself, there is an important point of segregating custody with trading venue, right? So if you trade on Interactive Brokers, Interactive Broker will not custody your funds. They will use State Street or other banks, right? So what we did in Bitfinex is, since 2019, before anyone else, we started integrating with the third-party custody providers like Copper, like Fireblocks, and we are like integrating Ozodia and a few others. And the reason is that in this way, hedge funds can keep their money on third-party custody providers that are maybe fully regulated in the UK, and they can still use Bitfinex as a trading venue. So they are not subject to one single point of failure, and they can segregate the risk across multiple venues.
Interesting. So you mentioned as the last point, just bring us to the aspect of regulation. You are based in Switzerland. Can you tell me, from a regulatory perspective, the challenges that you face, why Switzerland, and what you are doing to work with regulators to kind of address those challenges?
So personally, I base part of my time in Switzerland. The companies are not based in Switzerland. So we travel, you know, we are a company, among the two companies, we have around 270 people from 59 different countries. We are fully decentralized company. Our headquarters are both in BVI and Bahamas. That is where the companies are incorporated, just because all the major hedge funds in the crypto world are either in BVI or in Bahamas. And also the most prominent non-US banks that serve the crypto industry are in Bahamas mainly. So the regulatory challenges, nevertheless, both Bitfinex and Tether decided to stop servicing US customers in early 2018. We feel like there is, the US is kind of quite, has an aggressive stance against crypto, and I think the recent events demonstrated that. We, in 2018, is like we with a crystal ball, we could see that it took time, but it definitely happened. What we as Bitfinex we are seeking is acquiring licenses and getting licenses in key jurisdictions. So of course we have a licensing department that is taking care of exploring Bahamas, Europe with the MiCA license, possibly Switzerland, Japan, and other jurisdictions. So the issue is that all this, only the smaller, let's say the smaller jurisdictions like Bahamas or BVI or a few others. Now Hong Kong is adding, but in Singapore, but only the smaller jurisdictions are actually, or UAE, are actually developed, have actually developed a regulatory framework, right? So the US, no regulatory framework. You can see the battles between the SEC and local exchanges because no one, so there is no clarity on what is a security, what is not. MiCA license in Europe, it should have happened early this year, but now people tell that will come either in winter this year or early next year, right? So all these regulatory, and this keep creating regulatory uncertainty for all the companies. And so it's really hard for a company like Bitfinex to step in and trying to, you know, work with the regulator until there is certainty, right? Because if there is no certainty, we are just putting ourselves and our customers at risk.
Okay. Before we go into Tether, we change the subject. So can you maybe give us an overview of the product that you have within Bitfinex?
Sure. So we have the Bitfinex main Bitfinex spot trading platform. We have the derivatives platform that soon will also add through a third party also options. Right now we have only futures. We have, I think, probably the most powerful product for the next 10 years. We started a conversation with you asking about El Salvador, and the great thing is that Bitfinex, differently from other exchanges, is actually looking to expand to security tokens in an extremely serious way. So in 2019, we started working with a Kazakh regulator, because in Kazakhstan you have this area called Astana, IFC, that is the regulatory, is a new regulatory environment and financial area that has different conditions than the rest of Kazakhstan. And they have this incubation program that allows companies like us to obtain a license to be able to trade securities, but also offer offer the ability to companies to use our platform to raise capital for both their stocks or debt, so bonds. So we obtained that license and we started listing the first product in collaboration with Blockstream. And we are looking to, and we are seeking to add more products this year to the platform, now that all the regulatory complexity has been solved. And also in, we are seeking the same license and we should obtain this license within 1 month, also in El Salvador. So this, with these licenses, and we developed a platform called Bitfinex Securities. Bitfinex Securities allows companies to register, create a prospectus, give us the prospectus like a normal, like a public offering. Also the prospectus has to be approved by the regulator of the jurisdiction, could be El Salvador or Kazakhstan. And once that is approved, the company can raise capital through Bitfinex Securities in dollars, Tether, USDT, or Bitcoin. And the interesting part there is that with our securities platform, we can serve much smaller companies, right? So, and especially in emerging markets. We are now in a situation where if you are a company in, I don't know, Turkey or like Algeria or Georgia, if you want to raise $1 million is extremely difficult, right? If you are in Silicon Valley, well, now probably after, since 1 week is much harder because Silicon Valley Bank blew up. But before that was extremely easy to raise $1 million for any company, right? So they would through it, they will give you $1 million as a change, basically in Silicon Valley. You wouldn't be even serious to ask that kind of money. You should at least raise $50 million. But for all the rest of the world, it's extremely challenging. And so we think our platform is perfectly positioned to be the platform for security offerings for all the emerging markets, where, you know, the beauty of our industry is that there's a around $1 trillion industry, at peak was $3 trillion industry. And, you know, imagine just, you know, $10 billion, that is a tiny portion of it, of liquidity can be devoted to actually security, well, equity or debt investments in promising companies from emerging markets or markets that don't have the same access to liquidity that American companies have?
Well, the investors are going to get.
No, you are getting, first of all, tokenized shares. So we offer to, we have three products. So you can tokenize the shares of your company, existing company or new company. So as an investor, you are entitled, of course, to these shares, and we will have a secondary market on Bitfinex Securities. And also, these are as public offerings because they are regulated as public offerings. So you are entitled to dividends and so on. There are, in all effects, shares. And we have the ability of doing capital raise for bonds and secondary market for bonds. So also as a bondholder, a tokenized bondholder, you can access to dividends through Bitfinex Securities. The third one is the ability of creating funds and tokenize the shares of funds on Bitfinex Securities. So the idea is, without basically intermediaries, we allow you to get in touch with the biggest whales in the Bitcoin market. Bitfinex has the biggest whales in the Bitcoin market. We are the second biggest public Bitcoin wallet in the industry. So we have a lot of, our users are only whales. We are not super strong in the retail market. And so that's why we think that we have a huge opportunity there to bring together companies that have great products, but they have a hard time to raise capital, because if you go through the standard route, you have to go to the different banks and do road shows and so on. And every single step, we eat a portion of the fee or of the money that you are raising. So in our, with Bitfinex Securities, the idea is that the fees will be ridiculous compared to the actual traditional financial fees.
What will be the time frame to list a product of Bitfinex Securities?
So it is, it all is open now, so depends also from the regulator. So of course the regulator has to approve, because you have to provide a key information document to the regulator that explains the company and explains the business model, is exactly as you would do to apply to the London Stock Exchange. So it's kind of dependent from the regulator, but I would say between 3 and 6 months. So as a technological exchange for securities, we are not allowed to do marketing for the products that we list.
Is the company going to be doing the marketing?
It is all on their side, right?
Okay.
So is because that is a really risky regulatory issue if you start marketing.
Yeah.
Because this is like the serious industry. It's not like a token, like create new token, pump and dumps and so on. This is, if someone gets hurt, someone goes to jail.
It's the same, apply the same rules
yeah.
they are in financial. It's a very interesting product, and I think for emerging market, but also as an alternative for other company, could be very interesting. That also brings me, so I want to move to Tether now, and that is actually a great point, because I've got different relationship with the company in the mining industry in London listed on a stock exchange, and one of the question is, we have got a mine that we need to fund, and what about thinking a different way to raise capital? Perhaps if it's a gold mine, I know there is a Tether Gold as an opportunity to kind of like raise funds, so then the investor will get exposure to directly to the gold in the mine, rather than do a normal equity fundraise.
So Tether Gold is a product that is 100% backed by pure gold bars. So it's a stable coin. I think is probably the best stable coin, especially for the next 10 years. I think, part of the same family, I can easily say that. And I think that Tether Gold is superior to Tether USDT. Just because gold to me is not competing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is far superior because it's more transportable and can be used for e-commerce. But gold is actually competing with the dollar, right? Before 1950, all the biggest national currencies were pegged to the gold, right? You could not print out of thin air unless you would keep buying gold and stash gold in your own central bank. After the 50s, the US and all the others decided to depeg from the gold. And that led to situations like during the pandemic when 30% of the total dollar supply was created in 2 years, right? And also is leading to now we are seeing huge interest rates because there is too much inflation because they printed too much and so on. With gold, you couldn't do that. So to me, gold is the perfect is what US dollar should have been, right? This reserve currency that is natural because it comes from the soil and has been used by humanity for the last 5 to 6,000 years. So with Tether Gold, the process is simple. So someone wants to acquire Tether Gold tokens as they would acquire Tether USDT, for example. So they send the dollars, we buy gold bars that are 99.9 in quality. They are London quality insured bars, with the fixing of price and so on and quality standards. All these bars are stored in a vault in Switzerland, and there is 100% matching between how many Tether Gold tokens have been issued with the number of ounces that we have in the vaults. So we believe that now Tether Gold is $500 million in size, so quite small compared to Tether USDT. But if the geopolitical issues that we are seeing are keeping going, I'm pretty sure that Tether Gold is going to be probably the biggest stable coin within 10 years.
Okay. Now,
Thing, I mean, I was reading this morning about China and Russia, starting to look at an alternative currency that would be the yuan for their trades. But in the end, the problem is that eventually the BRICS group will not necessarily cannot trust necessarily one single currency that would be the yuan. So the gold would be the most intelligent stable coin or currency to be used among them because no one can fake the gold. And so we think that in general, gold-based stable coins will keep growing as a way in a world that is all about distrusting each other and nations distrusting each other.
I'm a strong believer in gold myself, so I completely agree. And it's a very interesting product. Now, we are here at the Paris Blockchain Conference, and yesterday there was this big side event from Circle. So obviously Circle is kind of like a competitor, if we want to say this word, with USDT. What's your take on Circle, and how do you do you see yourself being a different product than Circle?
Tether was born from the necessity of Bitfinex, actually, right? So in 2014 there were 5 exchanges: Bitfinex, Bitstamp, Coinbase, Kraken, and OKCoin. Binance was born in 2017.
Okay.
So in 2014, basically there were 5 exchanges and no one had banking. And so even the ones that had banking, in order to send a wire from an exchange to another, in order to do arbitrage, right? You want to buy Bitcoin where the price is lower and sell it where the price is higher, take the dollars from the where you sold the Bitcoin and move back the dollars from the exchange where the price is lower. To move the dollars across the exchange would take from 7 days to 2 weeks, basically. And so there was a huge price dislocation across all these exchanges. And so, the simple idea of Tether was, why we don't use this beautiful technology called blockchain and we don't put a dollar on top of it, right? Really simple as that. So we are big Bitcoin believers in Tether. And so we believe that Tether is a great tool for onboarding, is a great tool for financial freedom for emerging markets that need access to the dollar, but was a tool created by technologists, by people that are excited by the industry. You can see the difference. Circle in 2016 said that within 5 years no one would even remember Bitcoin, right? For us, like Bitcoin is our life, right? We would die on this hill.
It's so interesting because sometimes the press describe project in like a distorted way. And I think one of the arguments about Tether was always about they don't back their stable coin properly, it's all like papers. And there was an image of the company and behind the stable coin that wasn't what I'm actually seeing right now. Simple people, they are trying to make changes. So what would you say about the backing of the stable token in your defense to what the media sometimes put out?
So we started in publishing our attestations in 2021. We were the first stablecoin to provide the breakdown of reserves, right? So we had different assets, among which also commercial papers. That was the thing that scared everyone. Just to be clear, our commercial papers were extremely safe. They were rated A1 or A2 at bare minimum. So also in at that time, so we forced everyone else, all the other competitors, to publish their breakdown reserves. And our second competitor had the commercial papers as well. They removed it. But also we, as Tether, had 30 billion in commercial papers. There was speculation that was Evergrande. We never held Evergrande. We only had the highest quality commercial papers. And you know, we are seeing now Silicon Valley Bank that was discovered in having sold 18 billion of 10 years long maturity municipality bond, right? So it's like you buy a municipality bond of Santa Margherita Ligure or some other like these small towns, right? So so we instead had commercial papers with a really short maturity, 3 and 6 months. So in fact, we announced in mid 2021 that we would sell all these commercial papers and move everything to US treasuries. And so indeed we did that. We did sell, so no commercial paper that we had ever failed or defaulted. We never lost money on these commercial papers. They just expired and we moved everything to US treasuries. So now we are the biggest one in the crypto industry. We are the biggest US treasury holder. And globally, we are the 40th, I think, US treasury holder in the world as Tether. So right now, Tether is not only 100% back. Tether has his own equity, capital, own his own money that has been generated through holding US treasuries and do short-term investments in a really, with real proper risk management, not like these US banks. And that process generated in one quarter, that is the last quarter of 2022, $700 million in profit. So Tether has his own capital, own equity, that is $1 billion, that was $1 billion at the 31st December 2022. I don't have the finalized numbers, but at the if things keep going like this, at the end of this quarter, so 31st of March 2023, we will have 700 million more. That will be 1.7 billion in our own equity that will be kept in the company. To be at that point, you are not only 100%, so you are 102% back. So we are talking, we are comparing ourselves with banks that that invested in basically bonds on made by TikToks, right? So it's like they had holes of several tens of billions of dollars, and we are the company most scrutinized in the world, right? So everyone is obsessed by Tether, and yet Tether stood the black swan events, right? So even now we didn't have we could see from years before that US banking was going to have big troubles because it was over leveraged. So the history repeats, right? So what happened in 2007, 2008 would repeat itself. And so we did two things. We didn't want to rely on US banking. And second, we never wanted to keep large cash positions in the bank, because the issue with large cash positions is that they are not insured, right? So the FDIC insures up to $250,000, but for the stablecoin, it's nothing. So what we did, in fact, is keep everything in US treasuries, and also use repos and reverse repos markets, so that and also all our US treasuries are in short-term maturities, 3-6 months. So even if there is, we are also hedging this way ourselves against the yield curve and the potential issue of the yield of the Fed changing the yields pretty quickly, because you can sell them like daily, these US treasuries, being short maturity, and you don't lose basically a basis point on the sale. So the quality of risk management that that Tether does is incomparable to our competitors and also to the banking industry. So our second competitor, Circle, had 7% of their assets in as cash in Silicon Valley Bank, right? Okay. So thankfully they got it back, but it couldn't. Yeah. And what if they didn't get it back? Yeah.
Thank you for the explanation. The last question is about stablecoin interest. So there is, I've been into some conversations saying the dollar pay interest, right? Is a stablecoin going to pay an interest?
No, and ever. There's good reason for that. Is that first moment you start paying interest, you are considered a security. You are, because you, someone would buy your stablecoin with the expectation of making money, and that makes a security. So, but think about this, right? So Tether, 99.9% of the market of Tether is emerging markets, developing countries. So you are a Turkish person, which has the Turkish lira devaluating 80% year on year compared to the dollar. You surely will not complain to us that because we are not sharing 4% when you are actually saving 76% of value for you.